Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the extremely hot and sweaty day of free speech, and you never know what's going to happen. Some unexpected things happen. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-724-2719. If you act promptly, there is a summer fundraising drive, and there are good things like T-shirts to be had. So with that, I will welcome Mark Collett to the show. Mark, welcome to the show.
Everyone likes a T-shirt, Patrick.
Especially an RBN T-shirt.
And especially when it's as hot as it is. It's been really hot here for the last few days.
Can you imagine what it would be in Round Rock, Texas? Last time I was in Round Rock, it was 110 degrees, which is the hottest temperature I've ever experienced, at least outdoors, not in a sauna.
You see, Patrick might as well be speaking Spanish to me, because we work in Celsius. So now I'm going to open a web browser window and go, Fahrenheit.
Look, it's 40 something. I don't know what it is. You do Celsius. But you still like measure weight, people's weight in stone.
Right, what did you say? It was 110. Bloody hell, that's 43 degrees. Yeah, that is hot. That is hot.
Yeah.
Do we basically here in the UK we have a weird system of weights and measurements, which sort of seems to change on the fly. So depending where you're buying things. So if you're buying stuff at a market, people still use pounds, like a pound of, oh, can I have a pound of apples? Can I have a, you know, how much is 2 pounds of bananas? That is still the sort of regular, chat that you would have at a market stall. Whereas in a lot of cases, kilograms are what we use. So if you go to the gym, all the weights have kilograms written on them rather than pounds. So it's kind of a weird thing really here in the UK. We use both, and as a designer, I only use millimeters. So, you know, the worst thing I have, if somebody's saying to me like, oh, I need something designing. I'm like, oh, great. How big is it? And they say about 6 foot. That is literally the most enraging thing as a designer you can hear. Firstly, the use of the term about is something that just makes you immediately sort of clench your teeth. And then when they say 6 foot, you're like, oh, God, that's no help whatsoever. But, in the UK, things are probably a little bit more confusing than anywhere else in the world, in that people interchangeably use different things. So for the height of a person, people will tend to cite feet and inches. So that might seem strange, because I've just said people, you know, I use millimeters as a designer, but for the height of people, you know, people always use feet and inches. Whereas if you were measuring, say, the size of a piece of paper, that would be done in millimeters. So highly confusing and irregular.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, we've got plenty to talk about. So what?
I've not a thing has happened over this weekend, surely.
Not even 24 hours ago, the Biden thingamajig announced via a post on the website or social media or something that he was not going to seek re-election. And then I think about 2 hours later, via a separate post, announced that he was supporting Vice President Harris to be his replacement as the Democratic nominee. So he hasn't made an appearance in public. He hasn't spoken to the people, but apparently it's a done deal. And so there will be a nominating convention. So Harris isn't a shoo-in at this point, but the establishment is rallying behind her, partly because there's a bank account with, I think, $90 million in it that only she can access. And then there's also the aspect of she being a woman of color, and the only other woman of color available as a replacement would be Michelle Obama, who actually polls higher But at this point, but she doesn't have the 90 million, and I don't know. That's where we are right now. What are your initial thoughts on this?
Well, my first thoughts are sort of more of a comedy take, that you can imagine Biden waking up in about a day or so's time, you know, and asking his wife or his closest aides, you know, how's the election campaign going? And they're like, sir, you're not standing anymore. What? When was that decision made? I mean, he doesn't know what time of day it is. So I can imagine at the moment that he won't really understand probably what's going on at all times. And he will probably be quite confused. I doubt he made this decision. This decision was probably made for him, and he just had his, you know, his arm twisted up his back, or, you know, at times like this, you don't really know, because ultimately he decided to drop out. And I think having him decide to drop out is obviously what they would have wanted. They wouldn't have wanted to have to force him to stand down. So you don't know what's happened behind closed doors. They might have said to him, look, you know, you're standing down. He says, no, I'm not. I can still do it. They say, look, we've got this dossier on your son or a member of your family. You know, we'll make sure this goes away and that your family are looked after and you're remembered favorably. But, you know, you've got to go, basically. So you don't know really what's happened. And for a long time, I think it's fair to say for a very long time that he has been somebody who is under the control of others. He wasn't a president that was really making anything happen, was he? I mean, I don't think that's unfair to say, and I don't think really anyone would particularly disagree with what we're saying there. He's someone that you know, has basically become a little bit of a meme, hasn't he? He's not really seen as a serious guy. So based on everything that I've just said, I should imagine that they are saying, who are we going to pick? I mean, Michelle Obama would probably, as you've just said, be the kind of person that is seen as more acceptable, probably a better face for the party. She's somebody who's, you know, undoubtedly going to be, I would say, more popular with the party as a whole. But there have to be some kind of process of bringing her in, and that process might be contested. And again, I don't think it's unfair to say there isn't really any time for that kind of contest. So at the moment, you know, they're going to be looking at this and saying to themselves, well, you know, we are sort of up a certain creek minus paddle. We need to get something done. It needs to be done ASAP. And if it's not done ASAP, and if it's not all wrapped up quickly, we're going to be in a mess. Because what you couldn't have is a month and a half, potentially 2 months, choosing a new Democrat candidate. Because firstly, these things do take time. And secondly, I don't think it's unfair to say, they're actually highly embarrassing, aren't they? When you actually have a situation where you're selecting a new candidate, there's usually a number of fallouts along the way. There's usually a number of people, a number of things said which are embarrassing for candidates. And then those things, you really want those behind you when you're in the actual electioneering phase. So going into the election in, you know, just over 3 months' time, you wouldn't want all the sort of slanderous comments fresh in people's minds, would you? And that's what's really happening. Like, if you remember when Trump first ran for president, the stuff that was said by him about him by other Republicans was, in some cases, pretty harsh stuff. And the kind of harsh stuff that you don't want fresh in people's minds when they're being asked to vote for him. So I don't think the party could really go through a punishing internal selection process at this point in time. And if it did, that would probably be too close to the election and something that would be seen as pretty damn embarrassing for the party as a whole. I don't know if you agree with that. And also, once you start entering a selection process like that, I think what you end up with is a situation where there may well be wild cards. There may well be somebody step forward, sort of a Bernie Sanders character or someone else who's like, hey, you know, I'm down for this as well. You know, if we're opening this up, you know, you need to open it up to me, because everything's got to be done fairly and above board. And at that point, it's an unknown quantity. It's a free for all. And I just don't think they would need that at this point in time. So, you know, by saying to people, well, look, she's the vice president, we don't have the time, let's get this done, let's get this out of the way. At that point, that sounds fair, and I think it's the best play they can make, you know, all things considered. I don't think there's a better play. And I think if they tried for a better play in these circumstances, I think they would, you know, she may not be the best candidate, but it would be the least damaging thing to do, all things taken into account. And also, there is some continuity there as well. She's been the vice president. It's not a complete slap in the face then to the Biden family either, because, you know, you're not saying, well, look, we're kicking him out, we're wiping away all his legacy. Essentially, he's more or less, you know, he still is the president. But I mean, it is a passing of the baton in a way that I think is least embarrassing to him, to the party, and it will allow it will certainly allow things to move over in a much more ordered fashion, which is what that party needs right now. The last thing the party needs is chaos, because at the moment they're in a bad state. But will they be in a bad state with Kamala Harris? Will they be in such a bad state with her as the front runner? And that's really the big question, isn't it? Is this going to be a net positive to the Democrats' campaign? And from my point, I'd probably say yes. I'd probably say that this is actually going to be a good thing from their point of view, and potentially the kind of thing that will possibly salvage this campaign. I mean, if you had said to me, it's Trump, Biden, that's what's going to be on the ballot paper in November, I would have been, well, this is a clear Trump victory. There's no way they can do anything about it. This is a car crash. And after the botched assassination attempt, after the, you know, the first debate, which was such an obvious and clear win for Trump, I don't see how it could have been clawed back in any way by him. And I think subsequent debates would have got worse and worse and worse, because people would have been looking for it. Trump would have been looking for those openings to humiliate him more in the way that he had done in the first debate. I can't see it getting any better. I can only see it getting worse for the man. However, now it's very much a clean slate. That first big win, that's pretty much going to be, you know, wiped to one side. Well, yeah, Trump did win the first debate, but it wasn't against the candidate. And at this point, you can start to see things immediately sliding back to a more even, you know, a more even contest. And I think from the Democrats' point of view, this is all the wise move. They've left it late, but this could potentially salvage their campaign.
So here's, I mean, it could. I wish I had memorized what the Las Vegas odds were a few days ago. I wasn't really expecting Biden to drop out until the end of last week. And of course, I had recorded all my shows. I went on vacation for a few days. I recorded all my shows by Tuesday. But like a day or two later, to me, what was the last straw where I finally started thinking, well, okay, you know, because Biden looks stubborn and Biden has a team. The thing about Biden is, as you mentioned, yeah, he wasn't running things. He was part of a team. His role was the figurehead, but the figurehead who provided legal legitimacy, right? He was the ticket that his team needed in order to be running the show. But he gave an interview to Black Entertainment Television, which is a black network, the network for black people. And of course, he was saying how great he was, that he had the first, you know, black vice president, black female vice president. He nominated a black woman to the Supreme Court. And then he started saying about, and I have a Secretary of Defense, and he couldn't remember Lloyd Austin's name. And he said, the black guy.
That'd be funny enough on like normal TV, but on the Black Entertainment Network, it's like, come on, guys, you know I love you. I appointed that black guy, you know.
And the thing is, it's not the first time he's forgotten his name. Once about 2 years ago, because this business with his Alzheimer's or whatever it is, senility, is nothing new. And there was a couple of years ago, he was speaking at the White House or something, and he was trying to mention Lloyd Austin, and he just said, the guy at the Pentagon. And honestly, like Lloyd Austin, he's not that much in the news. I sometimes have to think for a second, okay, it's not Austin Powers. What's the guy's name? Oh, yeah, Lloyd Austin, you know, because he's not in the news that much. His role isn't even making policy, I don't think. His role has just been to purge the military of straight white men, especially those from the South who might be patriotic. But at any rate, when I heard that he said on Black Entertainment Television, Secretary of Defense, you know, the black guy, that's when I started thinking, okay, well, I guess he's toast. And so he's dropped out. The process now is there had been scheduled to be a formal vote on the nominee sometime in early August that would be virtual, not at the convention. And that was originally because of some technicality with the Ohio filing deadline. But then more recently, it was just to hurry up and get Biden official and just stop all of the speculation about him dropping out. Well, obviously, there's no need for that anymore. So it seems pretty certain that you will have the nomination occur at the convention that starts on August 19th. And there are 4,050 or so regular delegates who were selected in the primary and caucus process earlier this year. And these are the people who are allowed to vote on the first ballot. And these are the people who are empowered by the rules and laws to make this decision. So Harris has announced that she is seeking the nomination. At this point, I'm not aware of anybody else except for fringe people who are seeking the nomination. Nobody serious. It's possible that somebody serious might step forward, and then the process would be they would be courting these 4,000 delegates. If nobody gets a majority on the first vote, there are an additional 700 plus superdelegates who were not elected but got their status due to being Democratic committee members or elected officials like congressmen and governors. And then they would be involved in the second round. But as right now, it seems, well, the Las Vegas odds makers are giving Harris, I think, a 75% shot at getting the nomination and a 30% shot of winning the election in November. Trump is given a 60% chance, and then somebody else, you know, is the remaining 10%. So Las Vegas isn't presenting it as a shoo-in for Trump. I tend to think Trump's chances are a little bit better than that, but, you know, we have another 3.5 months to go and lots of things can happen. And I've never bought the idea that suddenly the elite and the power structure just decided that they wanted Trump. My position has always been that they're starting to see Trump perhaps as being the odds on favorite. And if you can't beat him, join him. But not that they would like him. And if a Harris campaign or somebody else starts getting momentum, then things could get complicated. So we'll see. Anyway, I'll kick it back to you, Mark.
I think Trump has run a far more mainstream campaign this time around than he did before.
And is that for better or for worse?
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau d'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Attention, freedom-loving patriots. Are you ready to dive deep into the principles that founded our great nation? Join me, Peter Serafin, and the Institute on the Constitution as we light the way to a brighter future with the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. At liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom, you'll find a treasure trove of online courses on the U.S. Constitution, carefully crafted to empower you with knowledge to defend your rights and liberty. Whether you're a student, a history enthusiast, or just a concerned citizen, these courses are for you. Gain a comprehensive understanding of our Constitution's principles, the wisdom of our founding fathers, and how to apply them in today's world. As a special offer to our freedom-loving listeners of Republic Broadcasting Network, use coupon code RBN at checkout and get 20% discount on any course. Join the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom and be a part of the movement to uphold the values that have made our nation exceptional. Unleash the power of knowledge and protect what truly matters, our Constitution. Visit liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom today. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Use code RBN for 20% off. Together, we'll be the beacon of freedom our founding generation envisioned. Liberty Lighthouse Classroom, illuminating minds, empowering patriots.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these 5 easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your 5 easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our 5 easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
I think Trump has run a far more mainstream campaign this time around than he did before.
And is that for better or for worse?
That's for worse. I mean, you know, I look at that and, you know, that is that's not a good thing. You know, Trump has basically, you know, gone out to essentially prove to people or distance himself from anyone that he may have been close to that was seriously anti-immigration, etc. There's a group called the 2025 Committee or something along those lines, and they're basically an anti-immigration, pro-deportation group, and he's done everything he can to distance himself from them. Now, that's not old Trump, that's new Trump. At one point, Trump would have flirted with different groups that were slightly edgier, that had a lot more to say about things like immigration. He simply isn't doing that anymore. He's pretty much been embraced by the mainstream of the Republican Party. And I think that's something that's quite worrying. I don't think he's the threat that he used to be. I think that's very important to say. He certainly isn't the threat that he used to be. The system doesn't fear him like it did. Now, I think there's also something that we need to point out. Now, when we say the system is rigged, it is rigged. But who's in on the rigging? People at the very top. are in on rigging an election. And the system's rigged in the fact that they don't necessarily rig every single election, but they control each party. So you don't really need to rig the elections when you control both the Democrats and the Republicans, or Conservative and Labour, like you have here in the UK. And that's a very important point to make. So when people say, oh, well, Trump's controlled now, you know, the Democrats won't fight anymore because they don't need to. No, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of Democrat staffers, people in the establishment, that will want, for their own personal, financial and political reasons, to ensure that that their guy stays in power. That's just a fact. So it's not like during all this the Biden lot are just going to say, right, okay, guys, let's down tools, you know, Trump's co-opted now, it doesn't matter, down tools, off we go, let's just all jog on. I think that people who say things like that are looking at things in a, if you don't mind me saying it, in a slightly, you know, a slightly naive manner. I don't think that's how it works. And I think fundamentally what you're going to see here is the people at the very top probably are going to be a lot easier about Trump getting in. But there's still going to be plenty of people in the Democrats who are going to fight hard. And why wouldn't they fight hard? Of course they're going to fight hard. They're going to want, you know, they're going to want their man back in the White House. And why are they going to want their man back in the White House? They're going to want their man back in the White House because he represents their interests. And that's just a fact, really.
There are a lot of people, you know, involved in campaigns, huge numbers of people. And the bulk, I've been involved in campaigns. The bulk of the people involved in campaigns are looking for something for themselves. So they're looking for some sort of job. And the candidate is the ticket to ride, like the Beatles song. So that goes on. Now, one other thing that happened over the past week that I haven't had a chance to address is the Republican National Convention. And I can't address it that much because I was on vacation and I didn't bother with it. When I came back, I listened to Nick Fuentes's summary of it. And Nick Fuentes was saying, well, you know, you can look at that and compared to 8 years ago or even 4 years ago, where there was obviously a lot of tension between Trump and the Republican establishment, you can now say that the Republican Party is Trump's party. The question is, did Trump defeat the Republican Party or did the Republican Party defeat Trump? And Nick Fuentes came down very clearly that it was the Republican Party that beat Trump. And so while, it's, you know, now it's his party, but he has become their vehicle. And you look at the people who were speaking at the convention, you had somebody who it's been described to me as a porn actress with a face tattoo, somebody named Amber Rose. I don't know. I guess she has an OnlyPage fan or whatever it's called, Only Fan page. But why was she there invited to speak? I mean, Trump's got enough issues with porn stars as it is. It was, you know, black after black, minority after minority. A woman, a lawyer who's actually a pretty serious person named Harmeet Dhillon, who had run unsuccessfully to be the chairman of the Republican National Committee about a year ago, but she's of Indian descent and she is, I guess, part of the Sikh religion. She came and gave some sort of weird prayer for Trump, which, well, fine. But I mean, the Republican Party is supposed to be the party of traditional Americans.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our EaseOff is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the EaseOff installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com. That's EaseOff.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
She came and gave some sort of weird prayer for Trump, which, well, fine. But I mean, the Republican Party is supposed to be the party of traditional Americans, of Bible thumping Christians. And it was just a, you know, weird procession of people who, OK, well, I mean, if you're pushing for max diversity, fine, but you've already got one party doing that. The Democrats are already doing that. So, like, well, I didn't watch it. The take I got from Nick Fuentes was that it might as well have been a Democratic convention from 4 or 8 years ago. It, you know, and Trump, yeah, okay, he talks about illegal immigration, but most of the types of issues that people supported him for are on the back burner or not even on the stove. So that's that. I don't know if you paid any attention to it, Mark.
I find it very odd when I see things like the things we're discussing now. So this Amber Rose, she's the woman who was behind the wonderfully named Slut Walks. I don't know if you're aware of the Slut Walks. The Slut Walks were these feminist processions where women walked through city centres dressed, as sluttily as possible. I mean, it's all in the name, really, isn't it? Slut Walk. You know, they walked through city centres as sluts, and they were... the idea of this, apparently,
is to send a message to men who apparently can't control themselves from raping women, and women should be able to wear whatever they want, and rape is completely, you know, a male thing, and all men are prospective rapists that just need to control themselves. You know, that's really the message of the slut walk. But it's one of those things which is, you know, in many ways obscene. It's one of those things that you would think the Republicans would be raging against. It would be the sort of thing that, you know, was led by Democrats. But now, you know, this lady is at the RNC. She's making the big speech. She's just got a new tattoo on her forehead. And all of this is...
And, do you know what the tattoo said?
It says bash slash.
Okay, I don't even know what that means.
I look, who does? I'm sure she does, but you know, that's what it says. And you know, she's one of those people that you know, I would say, if you were to categorize her and put her in a box, you know, if you were to pigeonhole this woman, you would have to say she is a typical lefty. You know, that's what she looks like. You know, that's the kind of that is how she looks. But apparently, no, she's not a typical lefty now. You know, she's apparently a Republican, and this is what the Republicans have to suck up. You know, they have to just get down with this. And I find this interesting because you made a good point that fundamentally there's going to be people who go to those conferences who are Christians, who are turning up with their family, their wife, their kids. They're thinking, well, Republicans are the ones that are fundamentally defending our traditional values, our decency, you know, the moral fabric of our society. And that's not just somebody who's at the event. She's not just somebody who's there, a member of the crowd, you know, one in thousands. And some of them are like, oh, what's she doing here? That's a bit strange that somebody like that's here. But she's one of the keynote speakers. She's up on stage. Who's it really appealing to? And as I said, there was a real energy to Trump's campaign in 2016. There was less of an energy to Trump's campaign in 2020. But the energy of Trump's campaign now is probably largely due to things like the assassination attempt and Biden's ailing health. You know, the actual power to this campaign, I don't believe, is actually good policies. At one point, that was the mark of Trump, wasn't it? It was policies that everybody wanted. Everybody wanted to build the wall. Everyone wanted to reduce immigration. Everybody wanted to see real, genuine political change. And I would say what Trump has become now, more than anything, is a cult of personality. And that's something that the assassination attempt has heavily leaned into. Mm. So now it's, you know, Donald Trump, he's the man because reasons, you know, he's cool. He's, you know, they tried to kill him. He was persecuted by the system. You know, that's cool. He's a guy that they've all looked at and they want to stop. And there was the mugshot, and that's cool. And a lot of this, to me, stinks of just being, well, that's cool. You know, this is a cool, you know, this guy's a cool guy. You know, he's got that something special. And yeah, fundamentally, I look at that and I don't really see him as probably a serious political campaigner this time. I'd say he's running on a very mainstream platform, and he's doing so in a way that is not really in line with what you, I, or others would want. It's very much in line with what mainstream Republicans would like. So that's really my take. I think he's lost a lot of energy, and this Amber Rose thing is probably more, you know, more just another huge example of this. It, you know, the Amber Rose thing is a huge example of this.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, so Trump, you can look at Trump and you can look at the RNC and you can say how, well, how does this really even differ from the Democrats of 4 years ago or 8 years ago? And there is a tendency amongst, say, people who might listen to this show to always say, well, you know, the Republicans are in constant retreat and they're just adopting whatever the Democrats do. They're just, you know, a few steps behind the Democrats. And that's one way of looking at it. One thing that was interesting is there was a New York Times columnist, and I can't remember which one, but somebody in the New York Times, I think it was in the New York Times, wrote this article saying, "What now that Biden has dropped out of the race, who would be the ideal person for the Democrats to nominate? Mitt Romney, who was the Republican nominee 12 years ago, who lost to Obama." And, you know, a lot of longtime Democrats make the exact same complaint about the Democratic Party, that it's just going where the Republicans used to be. And, you know, there's some truth to it. The fact is that you do have kind of a uniparty, and a lot of what the uniparty is about. If you're a Republican, you see on all these social issues that the Republicans are just following the Democrats. If you're an old time Democrat, you're seeing on a lot of, say, the foreign policy issues or the, surveillance and lack of civil liberties. The Democrats used to be big into civil liberties. And to the extent that there was a peace movement, it was in the Democratic Party. It's not there anymore. A lot of Democrats can, at least old time Democrats, can make these same complaints. So you're moving to a uniparty. Okay, here's something else that happened in the past week that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet. J.D. Vance selected as Trump's running mate. And J.D. Vance came out immediately and started bashing Iran. And, J.D. Vance is somebody who some people like Alexander Mercurius, for instance, he's spoken about J.D. Vance largely with high regard. Tucker Carlson's been a big promoter of him. And yet, you know, he comes out and immediately starts bashing Iran big time, saying, you know, if Iran is, a month away from a bomb, and, you know, you can't deal with Iran in just small measures. If you're going to hit them, you got to hit them hard. Well, you know, one thing about Iran being a month away from the bomb, people have been saying this forever. And if they've been 1 month away from a bomb for 20 years, it may be true. And maybe the reason they don't have a bomb is because they haven't been trying. They're 1 month away, but they haven't been trying. That's one way of looking at it. But what do you think about J.D. Vance? Do you have any do you have much previous knowledge about him? Do you have any strong feelings about him?
I don't really. And I hate saying that. I hate saying, like, well, I don't really have a take on this. But I genuinely don't. J.D. Vance, to me, seems like a very safe sort of Trump pick. It's the kind of person I imagine Trump going for. And in some ways, that's worrying. In some ways, that's really worrying, because you don't want that kind of guy. He's very, very philo-Semitic. He's in a mixed race relationship with an Indian woman. He's not the kind of person that I would look at and be like, well, yeah, that's the guy that we need running alongside Trump. That's somebody who's going to serve the interests of the American people. I see it slightly differently. I see him as the kind of guy that is going to be a classic Israel first. He's the kind of pick that I would say takes Trump closer to the establishment. And you asked earlier, has Trump won over the GOP, or has the GOP sort of reined in or lassoed Trump and got him under control? And you sort of said, well, you think that it's the GOP basically getting Trump under control. But I would say it's a little bit of both. I almost feel as if they've come together, as if Trump has moved in their direction and they've sort of said, well, look, if you come in our direction on a little bit, we'll still paint you
as, you know, this maverick, because that's what you thrive off. You know, you thrive off being the maverick. So we'll still paint you as the maverick, but you come our way a little bit. And then when you do say the odd maverick thing on, you know, migration, or you use the term anti-white, we won't all gasp in horror. But there are certain lines you can't cross now. And I would say, you know, Trump would like that, because Trump would believe he's in that way is, you know, that's the art of the deal, isn't it, for Trump? Trump is actually, you know, at this point, you know, living the Trump philosophy. He's getting something, they're getting something, everybody's happy, and he returns to power. He gets a second term. He's a two-term president. It's one of those miraculous two-term presidents, because it had a break in between. There's the assassination attempt. There's all the rest, and everyone profits. And that's how I see this. I don't necessarily see this as Trump, you know, completely being, you know, controlled and co-opted. I see this in many ways as him moving in their direction, them moving in his direction. They come together somewhere in the middle. And finally, what do you end up with? Well, you end up with this sort of unholy union that wins over a lot of people back into the fold, you know, people who were now against, you know, the Republican Party center. They were brought back into the fold to some degree. Trump becomes more of a mainstream candidate. They get what they want. Trump comes back to power, and they're not as worried about him as they were in either 2016 or 2020. And I do think there is the chance that if tensions grow in the Middle East, Trump would actually be a greater threat to world peace than potentially Biden. You know, I think Trump is someone who would be more likely to be gung-ho about the protection of Israel than potentially a Democrat. And I'm not going to take credit for this take, but Warren Baylog has said, and he's repeatedly enforced this, that he cannot stand behind Trump because he thinks Trump is one of the few men in America that could rouse young white men to join the military and march off for a good old-fashioned war. And I do think he's got a point there. I think if Biden, with all of his cabinet and, you know, the anti-white rhetoric and everything else, was the guy who was saying, right, we're going to war, we're doing this, you know, we're going to war with Iran, we're going to go to war at the behest of Israel, I think that would be something which would face an awful lot of pushback. But I think if Trump did it, there'd be a lot of people whooping and hollering. And Trump does have that kind of support. He does have that kind of energy behind him, if you will, that he is the man that people would follow over the top. You know, people do see him as more of a commander in chief. And, you know, from our perspective, I think that's very worrying.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you mentioned earlier that Trump has a cult of personality, and he does. And last week, in the immediate wake of the assassination attempt, where Trump, I mean, it was very iconic. It was very defiant what Trump did. And so that cult of personality got shifted into overdrive. And Trump, there's two things about Trump. One is he actually has a huge amount of independent of political capital that can't be transferred to anybody else. So he has the potential for independence. He doesn't seem to have the inclination to use it, but he has the potential for it. And I think also he's got a lot of unpredictability. You really don't know where he's going. So what Warren Baylog said is there's truth to it. He is somebody who could do this. He's also, at the same time, more likely than anybody else to be somebody who could participate in imposing a settlement on Israel that is not favorable. So he's kind of a wild card, and you know, in a lot of ways. And you know, Vladimir Putin said this. Vladimir Putin, at one point, I guess a year ago or so, said, well, honestly, if I had my pick between Biden and Trump, I'd pick Biden because he's predictable. You know, we with Trump, you never know what you're getting. And that's true. Trump has the wherewithal. He has the political capital to be independent and to do things that nobody else could do. Does he have the inclination? Probably not, but you never know. So anyway, but because of his rhetoric, his pro-Israel rhetoric, I couldn't endorse anybody who is saying the things he is saying regarding Israel, regarding Gaza, regarding the anti-genocide demonstrators. So, you know, I can't endorse him. And as I've been saying for months, if I get called by pollsters, which I sometimes do, I'm going to tell them that I support Jill Stein. But honestly, you know, if Trump becomes president, there's all sorts of possibilities, many of them not good, some of them hopeful. But at the end of the day, to the extent I have optimism, the optimism is based on.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it. Contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
Hey there, this is Sheila with Hempaste by Mynutra. Why is Hempaste better than other CBD options on the market? It's important to point out that the common CBD oil does not contain CBDA or CBGA, and they're only found in fresh or raw hemp products, like Hempaste. Hempaste contains the entire plant, minus any stems. This means the product retains the complete genetic code of the plant, which also includes those two vital cannabinoids, CBGA and CBDA. Over and over, experts keep saying the more intact or less processed the hemp plant is, the more effective it is. Happy Hemp Paste.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org. And visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
If Trump becomes president, there's all sorts of possibilities, many of them not good, some of them hopeful. But at the end of the day, to the extent I have optimism, the optimism is based on the United States no longer being this world's sole superpower that can call the shots. And my optimism is based on whatever president you get, Biden or Harris or anybody else, whatever president is going to be much more constrained by an international system increasingly dominated by a China-Russia axis. That's where my hope comes from. Anyway, I'm kicking it over to you for the final thoughts before we wrap up the show.
Well, my final thoughts are everything's in flux now. You know, a few days ago, I would have said everything's wrapped up, everything's done. You know, we've got a Trump presidency incoming. You know, that is where we're at. You know, no one's stopping that now. And fundamentally, you know, buckle in. You know, here's another 4 years of Trump. I don't think we are now categorically 110% on for another 4 years of Trump. I don't think we are. And I think even if we were, I don't think that would necessarily be something to celebrate. I don't think that would necessarily be something where we'd all be like, ooh, that's going to be good for us. I think whatever happens, nationalists, you know, complaining probably isn't going to make any form of difference. Now, that sounds a little bit negative, but I always think whatever happens, we have to be pragmatists and we have to look at this and say to ourselves, you know, what can we as a group, as a political movement, gain from one of these guys getting elected? Now, the answer to that is probably nothing. In some cases, the only thing I will say for Trump, and I've always said this about Donald Trump, is that Trump does present more opportunity to us in terms of the fact he does at least talk about some of the things that we talk about. He legitimizes some of our points. But unfortunately, I don't think he's really going to be focusing on those things anymore. And it's interesting to see that even though in some ways he's built this what seems unstoppable cult of personality around himself, a lot of the people who were supporting him and were very hopeful about what he was going to bring in 2016, they have now distanced themselves from him. And, you know, myself included, really. So there's still plenty of interesting things. There's still a lot to play for. I think things look more uncertain than they did. But if Trump gets in, I think it'll be on the basis of cult of personality more than it will be a genuine, you know, high energy campaign this time.
Yeah, it would be nice if he presented a real platform that was something people could get behind, and then he would have a mandate. But anyway, well, we'll have plenty to talk about over the coming weeks and months. So thank you for joining me, Mark.
Thank you for having me, Patrick. It's been a pleasure.
And I'll be back again next time, tomorrow, with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Gilad Atzmon says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, you know, LGBTQRS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What? Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, I don't know. How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act. It's the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, you know, I mean, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show.
Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.